Good afternoon. Welcome to the 330 Sports Show. I'm Justin Coffin. Today is Thursday, March 2nd, 2023. We are in March Madness now, basketball season. The first half of the show is going to be very basketball loaded. Wearing red down here, downtown Youngstown at Youngstown Studio with Joe Danier. We're going to talk a lot about YSU hoops, both the men and the women play tonight at the Beagley Center. The women tip off in about 2 hours from now. They will play Northern Kentucky in the 4-5 quarterfinal matchup to get to the semifinals in the Horizon League Championship. Following that, at 8 o'clock tonight, we will have the men, the number one seed, taking on the number eight seed, the Detroit Mercy, I believe it's the Titans. So that's going to be a great matchup, and we're going to get into YSU basketball here in just a second. Let me tell you what's going to come on after that. We'll also touch base with the Cleveland Cavaliers. We will touch base with a lot of Major League Baseball rule changes. We're going to just touch base on that, no pun intended, a little bit towards the end of the show. We'll dive deep into that in a future show. We'll talk a little Cleveland Browns news and notes, but let's get into, and we're going to get a little weird at the end of the show, ayahuasca. We're going to talk a little bit about Aaron Rodgers and whatnot. So let's focus on the main topic of the day. That is going to be the YSU men's and women's basketball team. So we're going to start with the men's. First of all, the men are the Horizon League regular season champions. So they get that number one seed. They earn that. They host a home game tonight over at Beagley. So with that said, let's go through some numbers here for you. So YSU men's basketball by the numbers. This roster is very, very upperclassmen loaded. A lot of graduate seniors on there, a lot of fifth-year, sixth-year guys, and some juniors and seniors as well. So they have played a total of 1,128 games total on this squad. So that's a lot of games. They really only have one freshman that plays a lot, and they're not a whole lot of younger guys that play on this team, a very veteran squad for this Penguins bunch. Let's go over the number two. There have been two coaches of the year now by YSU men's basketball. We have Jared Calhoun in 2022-2023 this year, and Dan Peters in 1997-1998, going way back there. 24 wins is the most in YSU, well, would be the most in YSU history since 1963-1964. So the last time YSU won that many games way back in the early 60s, YSU is currently 23-8. They have four players. This is kind of cool to put the student athlete in student athlete. They have four players on the rosters that have currently earned their degrees: Covington, Green, Nelson, and Shelton. So great stuff out of them. Congratulations already earning their degrees. 95 is our next number. 95 wins for Jared Calhoun, who now has 219 in his Youngstown State career. 219 in his career, 95 at YSU. He was at Fairmont State previous to his stop at YSU, and obviously an assistant at West Virginia with Coach Bob Huggins. The next number, 42. Players in YSU men's history with 1,000 or more points. Dwayne Cohill is the most recent member of that squad. Joe and I and BJ were down at a YSU press conference yesterday. I got to hear him speak a little bit. And Jeremy, our friend at Youngstown Pizza Reviews, had him on his spotlight the other day. So check out Youngstown Pizza Reviews for his like little interview with Dwayne Cohill. Next number, 1,252 points in his career at Youngstown State. Dwayne Cohill, a former top 50 recruit overall in the country, goes Dayton, plays a little bit in his early years, unfortunately tears, I believe it was his ACL, transfers to YSU, and has stuck it out and been a great, great player for Youngstown State. 83.5, that's my number of the day. Now, yesterday at the press conference, Coach Calhoun said the big number they look for is 70. 70 on the defensive end. That's how many points they want to give up, 70 or less. He feels like if they give up 70 or less points, they're going to win this game. So if you take YSU scoring numbers and hopefully holding this Detroit team to 70 points, it's a recipe for success here. My bet of the day, and I believe the total was at 153 the last time I looked, but my bet of the day for YSU men's basketball, take the over. Take the over in that. It's probably about minus 110. I'm going to guess it's 152, 153 and a half in that range. I'm going to go over on that. And YSU men's basketball has been very, very good throughout the year with hitting the over. So that's going to be my bet of the day. And then YSU also 13-2 at home. A win tonight would set YSU's record for home wins in a season with 14. So pretty great stuff there. Most likely starters tonight, Adrian Nelson, 13.5 points, 9 rebounds, 1 assist a game. Malik Green, 13.9 points a game, 7 rebounds, 1 assist. Dwayne Cohill averaging about 18, 3.5, and 5. Bryce McBride, 7.5, 2 rebounds, 3.5 assists. And Brandon Rush, 14 points, 2.6 rebounds, and 1.3 assists on the season. So that is a look at YSU men's basketball by the numbers. Let's go through some of the awards this team has accumulated, and I'm sure the players and the coaches at this point could care less about the awards. They just want the win tonight, get to the semifinals in Indianapolis, but we're going to give them the credit that they deserve. So first of all, Coach Jared Calhoun, great dude, good guy, comes in here from Fairmont State and is just killing it with the Penguins. Also, and I've said this before on the show, keep this in mind, two of his assistant coaches at Fairmont State are now head coaches in the NBA with the Memphis Grizzlies and the Boston Celtics. So pretty good stuff right there. But Jared Calhoun, the coach of the year in the Horizon League. Also, first team All-League, Dwayne Cohill, combo guard. Third team All-League, Adrian Nelson and Brandon Rush. And then you have the all-freshman team with John Loveless Jr. So best of luck tonight to the YSU men's basketball team. Expecting great things out of them. Just a little overall snapshot. They have played Detroit 2 times this season. They are 2-0. It is very difficult to beat a team 3 times in a season in football, basketball, whatever it might be. But YSU is going to try to do that and get that job done. They're face a tough matchup. The number eight Detroit Mercy Titans, they are 14 and 18 on the season, 9-11 in conference play. But this is a team that is very, very good. A very, very good scoring team, I should say. The Penguins this year did win both games, but one game was a 5-point game and the other one was a 10-point game. So they played in Detroit. They got the win 84-79. That was back on January 12th. And then just about a month ago, they played exactly a month ago. They played at home 73-63 win over Detroit. So another story that's going to be on a national level for this game is Detroit features the number one scorer in the entire nation of college basketball, and it's by a lot. His name is Antoine Davis. He averages 28.4 points per game. And you got to think, yeah, okay, it's college basketball. You know, the competition might not be as great as the NBA, where the leading scorers are right around 30 points a game. However, keep in mind, they're also playing 8 less minutes per game than in an NBA game, 40 instead of 48. So very, very impressive numbers there. And this is another crazy stat where you might get some national media in here. He needs 26 points total. He averages 28 on the season. If he gets 26 points, he becomes the all-time leader in college basketball history in scoring to tie Pete Maravich, Pistol Pete Maravich, who played at LSU way back. And Pistol Pete Maravich is one of those like legendary guys that, you know, a lot of people might not know the style he played, but he was one of the most skilled basketball players. But a lot of people in the game of basketball would know the name Pistol Pete Maravich. So he is trying to break his record of 3,667 points. Just think about that. 3,667 points in a college career. So Antoine Davis, he is coached by his father. So that's kind of a cool nugget there, but hopefully we get a little double thing here where we'll let him get his scoring record tonight, but YSU gets the victory. That's kind of what I'm hoping for. But Coach Calhoun said yesterday in the press conference, it's like, that's fine. You know, we want to get after him. We want to, you know, make things tough against him. So whether he scores 20 or 30 or even 40 points, that's fine, but as long as it takes a lot of shots, you know, we don't want him to be too efficient is basically what Coach Calhoun was saying there. So that's kind of a look at the game tonight. Again, my best bet, I don't know what the spread is on the game tonight. I do like YSU to win, but I really like the over in this game with the scoring of Davis and YSU's offensive prowess. I think that over is a solid bet for both teams there. So good luck to the Penguins. That's a look at the men's side. That game should tip about 8 o'clock. Now, on the women's side, that game is going to start at about 5:30. So we're talking about an hour and 50 minutes. So if you're coming down downtown, get down here and wear your red and support the Penguins, get into Beagle, and let's take a look at the YSU women's squad by the numbers. So first number we're going to start with the YSU women's squad is the number 9, the number 9. They have 9 seniors on this veteran Penguin squad. 9 seniors, pretty impressive. The next number, 13. 13 Horizon League victories, which is only the third time they've done that in program history. The number 2,000, Lily Ritz, who is first team all-conference, has scored now over 2,000 points in her career and nearing 1,000 points in her YSU career as she transferred in. Two players on the roster earned all-conference nods with Lily Ritz. As I mentioned, she was the defensive player of the year, as well as first-team all-conference. And then Megan Callahan, who we got a chance to talk to yesterday, she was third-team all-conference and doing a nice job at the guard spot. She also transferred in from Robert Morris University, so doing a great job there. Also, the next one, 300th game tonight for Coach John Barnes. He is doing a fantastic job and just doing some great things for YSU. So he is, you know, was previously the coach of the year there for YSU, doing an excellent job. And we wish him the best of luck tonight and the Lady Penguins going for their 20th win and his 171st overall win. The numbers to know for YSU tonight are 67.5 points per game on offense, 59.5 points per game on defense. So they have a +8 ratio overall on the season. Also, they are 8-7 all time versus Northern Kentucky, 2-0 this season versus that squad. So we'll get into a little bit more there in a minute. Their stat leaders on the season, Lily Ritz, hard to miss her. Again, just a really big force inside, doing an excellent job, real athletic, big on the inside, 17.4, nearly 11 rebounds. She has 37 blocks and 53 steals on the season. Malia Magistro, we've had her down here on the show with her dad. By the way, good luck to her dad. Kennedy Catholic is playing some good basketball right now in the Pennsylvania State playoffs. But Malia, about 10 points a game, 3.4 rebounds, and she has 10 steals on the season. Megan Callahan, 11 points, 3 rebounds on the season with 19 steals. And then Paige Shy, 8 points a game, 4.2 rebounds. She has 30 steals on the season. And Dina Gerals, 6.8 points, 1.7 rebounds, and she has 14 steals on the season. So YSU doing an excellent job. Struggled a little bit, YSU women, in the month of February. I believe they were 3-5. However, closed out the season with a win and hopefully can get the job done tonight to get to those semifinals in Indianapolis, the home of the Pacers. So real quick snapshot look at the YSU on the season: 19-10, 13-7 overall on the horizon, which was good for the four seed, 12-4 at home, 7-6 on the road, looking for that 13th win at home tonight. They played Northern Kentucky twice, both wins, both close wins. The first game at Northern Kentucky, they got a 7-point win, 59-52. And then, just fairly recently, about a month ago, they played home against Northern Kentucky and had a 52-51 victory for the Penguins. So, again, tonight, semifinals, 5:30 tip. So, nearing tip-off, hopefully you're getting down here and watching these ladies play. But we're hoping for win number 3. As I mentioned with the men, it's very, very difficult to win 3 games against an opponent. But hopefully the men can get it done against Detroit. Hopefully the women can get it done against Northern Kentucky, move on to those semifinals, and they'll be playing in Indianapolis very, very soon. So good luck to the YSU Penguins. That is a look at Penguin basketball, and we wish them all the best. Again, get down here if you can. I know most of the tickets have been sold, but I believe there's still going to be plenty of walk-up tickets if you're available. Get down here, wear your red, support the Penguins, and support downtown Youngstown. All right, so that's our look at the Penguins. Let's go to a look around the world of sports. So we're going to start, Joe, with we're going to get a little weird first before we get into some Cavs. Yeah, this is like the Ocho stuff. Yes, before we get into the Cavs, the Browns, some other things here. But we're actually going to start in the state of Wisconsin because there's a lot of weird stuff that goes on there, namely Aaron Rodgers, who might not be playing quarterback for much longer in with Green Bay. So he's a quarterback that could be on the move here very shortly. So
he'll always play quarterback in his own mind.
Yes, he will. He does a lot of things in his own mind. This is a weird, weird dude, but we're going to get into some weird things that he does. So first thing, have you ever heard of ayahuasca?
I have.
Okay. So let me read the definition. Then I want to know what you know about it. Okay. All right. So here's the definition of ayahuasca. Is plant-based psychedelic. Psychedelics affect all the senses, altering a person's thinking, sense of time, and emotion. They can cause a person to hallucinate, seeing or hearing things that don't exist or are distorted. So Aaron Rodgers has taken a legendary ayahuasca trip last year, just did another one apparently, and I saw a story about he talked about this man in a hat that he kept seeing. Sounds like something straight out of a horror movie. So your thoughts on, I posed this question, by the way, on social media yesterday, and I got a resounding no from everybody. And there was at least 10 people that were like, hell no, no. I said, if someone would pay for your ayahuasca trip, would you do it? Yes or no? And everybody said no. I think in the current state of my life, I would say no. If I was in different circumstances, maybe. But tell me what you know about ayahuasca, and we'll dive into that a little bit more.
All right. I would do it in a heartbeat. In fact, when I leave here, I might do one. So So what I know about it is they kind of team you up with a shaman, somebody okay. who is really sort of like learned in the spirituality of what these psychedelic trips do.
Okay.
And did you hear Aaron Rodgers' Joe Rogan podcast, by the way?
I did not, actually.
Okay. So he described a lot of what and why and how.
Okay.
Whatever. And I think when you're doing soul searching and you're trying to find things yeah. that are bigger than yourselves or whatever, mm-hmm. it's a good pursuit because, you know, it maybe tamps down your ego and makes you a more human being and makes you more loving and giving and whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Now, under the bad circumstances, like that could probably jack you up pretty
sure.
good for the rest of your life. So, I mean, it's not something that I would take lightly, but I think it does open a lot of people up. I mean, Steve Jobs and sort of like all those early innovators, they
yeah.
all had LSD trips on a regular basis
mm-hmm.
and they saw most of their innovations when they were in that state of inebriation, I'll call it.
Very interesting. I've actually just saw a news story on psychedelics that they're using to treat people with PTSD from the military
sure.
and it's showing it's working. But Aaron Rodgers is not someone that suffers from PTSD, maybe a rough sack here or there, you know, but so I can't compare someone that's been in the military, been in times of war, been in seen and maybe even done some terrible things to someone that's played quarterback right. in the NFL.
Well, let me frame it for you though. So most of us like our age, mm-hmm. like, we start having that midlife crisis and we go explore what we could have been and buy a Corvette, right? Well, Aaron Rodgers can easily buy a Corvette.
Sure.
So his midlife crisis is not going to be exploring like financial exploration. It's going to be more like inward exploration.
Interesting.
So there's only so much that he can't do.
Okay.
Right. And it's
right.
unknown to him. So that would be like to an extra exponent.
Okay. Okay. So from what I know, and fill me in if I'm wrong or elaborate.
Am I like the drug use go-to here?
More so than I, more so than me. Like if you know more than me, you're okay, an expert right, on that subject.
I'm
so, I guess I don't know where this took place, somewhere out west, Wyoming, Montana, Idaho, somewhere like that. He rented this like one, it like from the outside, it only shows this like little like doorway, but apparently you go underground and there's like one bed and like you're in this like cabin. So you're basically isolated for several days. Are you eating or drinking or anything
I
like
don't
that?
Think so.
Because okay, so we've talked about Yellowstone on this. Casey, the brother, does this and forgive me if I'm misspeaking or politically incorrect, but like some Indian ritual.
Yeah, peyote.
Peyote. Okay, yeah. So he did that to like experience what he's supposed to do with his life yep. in the show Yellowstone. So this is kind of similar, kind of different.
About the same.
Okay.
Yeah, and that's okay. what it does is it looks in your brain. And if you're looking for answers, you might get some like hallucinations that make those things more real.
Maybe he's seeing visions of a wide receiver for the Green Bay Packers that will help him, or the New York Jets quarterback he could play for, a team he could play for. So I don't know. I just wanted some more opinions on that because I know the cusp of it, but I don't know like down the rabbit hole. So
yeah, and you think like if you're a weird dude you mm-hmm. get weirder.
Yeah,
if you're more like open and whatever, it makes you whatever that is magnified.
So okay,
I don't suggest weird people doing it.
Yeah, and
but weird people don't know they're weird.
Well, that's a good point. That's a Joe, am I weird?
Let's not,
because I don't know.
Let's not do it.
all right, fair enough. Staying in the state of Wisconsin but also local ties, our owners, the Haslams, by 25% of the Milwaukee Bucks. Now, that is roughly $875 million. The Bucks franchise was valued, had an appraisal of $3.5 billion, which comes in at like the third or fourth most in North American sports. Now, these franchises don't become available very often. So like the Denver Broncos, like the Walmart people, the Waltons bought that up real fast. When these franchises, the Phoenix Suns, I believe, just sold for like over $4 billion. So when these franchises become available, like people know they print money and are money makers. Yeah, you might have to invest some, but you know you're going to get a return on that investment real fast. So
probably the best store of money that's available.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. You're not putting it in a bank and earning, 1% interest.
If the shittiest team in the NFL can make bank, you're in good shape.
Exactly. And because there's only 32 of those franchises in the world and everyone wants a piece of the NFL. Now the NBA, it's very similar. So what did I say? 875 million. That's 25% of the Milwaukee Bucks franchise value. So people would like to say, hey, why don't you spend that $875 million on your new stadium that you want to build in Cleveland? But that's not going to, hopefully this investment for the Haslam Sports Group or whatever it is will then in turn improve upon the Browns franchise. But people might say, maybe stick to one thing and get good at one thing before you dip your toe into another too. So what say you on that?
So the taxpayers are probably going to front most of that
stadium. Yeah,
so I don't think he's worried about that because of the economic impact that it has anyway. So
sure.
I don't look that group to having a much expense in that. There'll be a lessor and that's about it. But I'm with you. Like to have a Haslam like thumbprint on another sports deal, I prove out the one you got already.
I mean,
I think what you said where because it they don't come around often, you had to jump on it before. Now, is basketball, kind of iffy the owners about who they let into that club?
I think it's very it's a very exclusive club, but I think they know someone that's maybe in the NFL, and he's not a majority owner. They're going to be 25%. That's still a significant amount, nearly $1 billion.
Well, once they get a winning record with the Browns, he'll buy the rest of the
Bucks. Yeah, right, exactly. So I saw a couple of memes out there. I thought you would appreciate this. So how the Cavs beat the Bucks: 1, get stronger inside; 2, better perimeter scoring; and 3, have the Haslams buy them. So the Cavs, a rival of the Milwaukee Bucks right now. So I thought that was pretty good. So you get Cleveland and you get Cleveland and Milwaukee in there a couple times. It is NFL Combine week. We have friend of the show, Steve Hellwagon from Bucknuts. I know he's down there in Indianapolis this week. But Ohio State has 8 guys that will be, I don't believe YSU has any this year, but Ohio State has 8 players that are going to be in the NFL, invited to the NFL Combine. They may have more drafted, but CJ Stroud, Paris Johnson Jr., Jackson Smith and Jigba, DeJuan Jones, Zach Harrison, Luke Whipler, Ronnie Hickman, Cam Brown will all be at the NFL Combine. And I'm expecting Stroud and Paris Johnson for sure first rounders, and you could get 2 more. You could have up to 4 first rounders in this Buckeye class, and you're going to have several day 2 guys: Zach Harrison, DeJuan Jones for sure, Luke Whipler maybe, and then I think a little bit later on you're going to see Ronnie Hickman maybe 3rd, 4th, 5th round off the board, and Cam Brown I think is a late round pick.
Do you think corner Jigba's playing, or how many snaps he took this last year is going to work against him?
I think it will hurt a little bit because he played something like 50 snaps, but he tried to get back on the field. I think it was a little funny how that was all handled, because it was like the 5th or 6th play of that Notre Dame game, which was the first game of the season that he got hurt. And then he just never was himself, coming off like maybe the most amazing year in Ohio State history for a wide receiver. So I think he has elite skills. He doesn't have that like blazing speed. He doesn't have that like huge body frame but what he does is he's got that like shifty movement. He can get open. He's smart. He has great hands, and he's able to like, he's like, I hate to say it, it feels like a Tony Romo. He's quick, not fast, one of those type things. But I think he could be a great slot receiver in the NFL. So if you could get him at the end of the 1st round or early 2nd round, that would be a great pickup. Someone like the Browns, that would be a great fit.
Because we got Anthony Schwartz on the long runs, right? So we're good. We're good on speed. We don't need anybody speedier than
Anthony Schwartz. We'll see. I would trade Jackson Smith and Jigba for Anthony Schwartz right now. And I think everyone on the that is a Browns fan would do that. I just want to show you guys this score from last week. This is one of the highest scoring NBA games that I've ever seen. 176-175 Sacramento over LA last week. That game went to two overtimes, but very, very crazy score there. But I mean, nearly every quarter, someone was in the upper 30s or early 40s. So just an amazing numbers there. Hopefully you took the over in that game. Also last week, but recently since we've done a show, we had already mentioned Donovan Mitchell scored 71 points for the Cavs earlier this year, which was good for eighth best all time. Damian Lillard just did it last week. 71 points, had 43 or something at halftime. But he and Donovan Mitchell now are tied for eighth most points ever in an NBA basketball game. And you look at some of those numbers outside of Kobe Bryant, all those games happened in the 60s and 70s. All of them. So just amazing stuff that you get that in the same season. Two guys putting up 71 points in Mitchell and Damian Lillard. So well, good stuff there.
I'm telling you, though, like in the 60s, you had some dominating beasts and everybody mm-hmm. else was just kind of average.
Today, yeah.
Those numbers mean more because the competition is just way more.
I think you're exactly right. And a lot of those numbers, if you look, are real big guys like Wilt Chamberlain. Yep. Like he's going against the guy that might have been like, you know, banging groceries on the right. on the weekend, whereas, you know, and putting up like, you know, like 70, 80 points, whereas these guys, the NBA has, you know, right now might be the best talent it's ever had. There's just 30, 40 guys that can put up. I heard something where the number of guys scoring 20 points a game, like 10 years ago, it was like 12 or 13 guys. Right now, it's like in the 30s. It's like unbelievable, the scoring in the NBA, how high up it is, but the skill level is just incredible. So,
you know, like great when you're point. Watching like the Harlem Globetrotters and they get that one dude that's 7'4"
yeah.
and guarded by the 5'4" white dude.
Right.
Like, that's what Will Chamberlain
Exactly. And I don't want to like, you know, completely say, you know, like what he did wasn't amazing, because it was, but and there were great players in his day too, but the quality and caliber and depth of those sure. players was nowhere near what it is today. Real quick check in with the Cleveland Cavs, 26-7 at home, 13-19 on the road. Got to get that road record improved, but still second in the Central and fourth in the East. But if you look at the standings right now, Cavs are three games back of the third seed 76ers, but they are only a game and a half up on the New York Knicks for the fifth seed. So the Cavs are probably going to be in that fourth or fifth spot in the Eastern Conference playoffs. But right now the Knicks are nipping at their heels and they need to fight them off for that spot. Here's a look ahead at the week's schedule. Saturday, they're going to play the Detroit Pistons. Monday, I will actually be at that game and I will be courtside at that game. I am very excited nice. About that, against the Boston Celtics on Monday night. Then they're playing kind of like a Major League Baseball little schedule here. I've never seen this before this year, but Wednesday and Friday, they're going to be playing at Miami for two games. And then Sunday and Tuesday after that, they will be playing at the Charlotte Hornets. So kind of a little bit NBA or MLB scheduling there. And I thought that was kind of neat. So, but it makes sense. If you're going to travel, maybe play two games. A lot of times that's what college teams do, or minor league baseball teams, or just baseball teams in general. So, pretty cool stuff there. All right. Real quick, check in with the leaders of the Cavs. Mitchell, his numbers are actually up from that. They're nearing 27 and a half. He had a 40-point game last night. Allen is right under 10 rebounds a game, and Garland right under 8 assists per game for the Cavs. Just great, great, you know, stats and everything right there. And also, month by month, starting off the month with a loss, 0-1, but every month they have been 500 or better. So hoping to finish strong here for the Cavs. And some of their statistics overall, you know, just great numbers overall by all of the four stars. And also Okoro's starting to pull his weight a little bit more, and you got LaVert off the bench, and you got some Ricky Rubio and some other guys starting to, make an impact on the court as well. Now, We mentioned last week, spring training is underway for the Cleveland Guardians, the Pittsburgh Pirates, and the rest of Major League Baseball. Now, we are in the month of March, so 4 weeks from today, 4 weeks from today is opening day for the Cleveland Guardians. You can still call them the Indians if you would like, but I'm going to call them by their proper name now. But Thursday, March 30th, they will play at Seattle. And then a week later, or 8 days later, their home opener, Friday, April 7th, against those same Seattle Mariners. So baseball, believe it or not, right around the corner. We're going to go plenty in depth in about a month on, in about 3 weeks on the Cleveland Guardians. But, you know, just had a really, really solid season last year. No one really expected it, but sixth best ERA in baseball last year as a team and seventh best team batting average in all of baseball last year. So good stuff out of a very, very young team. Now, I don't want to spend a ton of time on all the intricacies of the rule changes in Major League Baseball, but I am going to show you the three major changes and then Joe and I'll just elaborate or discuss them a little bit, and we'll elaborate further on a show down the road. So, Joe, first major rule for Major League Baseball. When the bases are empty, there's going to be a pitch clock. So no runners on base. The pitcher has 15 seconds to get into his windup. When there are runners on base, that pitcher will have 20 seconds to release or to get into his windup. Apparently, this has been shaving some time off of games. And what do you think for a pitch clock in general in Major League Baseball?
The attention span of a viewer is limiting every year.
Yes.
So if you don't speed these games up, the viewership is just going to go down, and the whole value of the MLB goes down with it.
And that is 100% why they are doing this. 100%. Now they said they've been trying this for a couple years in the minor leagues, and they said it shaved off about 25 minutes from each game in the minor leagues. So
I'll take it.
You know, it's pretty good stuff there. Now, second major change is the shift. Now, the shift is when, you know, you might have three infielders on one side of the base. For example, you got a left-handed hitter up at the plate. You pull your shortstop over to where the second baseman would be, and you put your second baseman basically in right short right field where you can throw them out. And then your third baseman plays kind of where the shortstop would be to really prevent that hitter from getting a ball through the right side of the infield. With a pull hitter on that's a righty, you would do the same thing on the left side. They are taking that out of the game. So the basics of this are you have to have both infielders on each side. So the first baseman and the second baseman have to be on the right side of second base. The shortstop and the third baseman have to be on the left side of second base. And I believe their feet or part of their foot has to be on the infield dirt as the pitch is released. So the shift, think it's a good idea, bad idea for baseball,
man? That one, I don't think it has a big advantage. I mm-hmm. think you play your defense against a hitter the way
sure.
you think it's going to go. So mm-hmm. I think there's a disadvantage for the play.
Okay. Okay. I don't know what my opinion is on this, but I will say I haven't been a big fan of the shift watching baseball. Maybe I'm not a complete baseball purist. Like a lot of baseball purists are like, they want baseball to go back to the way it was in 1960. They want the pitchers to all hit. They want, you know, like more bunting, more stealing, you know, hit and runs, all that stuff. And that's totally fine because baseball now has become a game of the strikeout and the home run. That's, you know, and I think baseball wants it to get back to that. You know, there's more decisions to be made. There's pitch outs, there's, you know, stealing on certain pitchers and stuff like that. So I think this will bring more strategy into the game of baseball and make it maybe a little bit more fun for the viewer. So, and I think when you see all these rule changes, it's to bring in more viewers, more eyes, because yeah, home runs are exciting, but when it's only a home run or a strikeout and there's not much in between, the games do get a little dry, and I could see where
bases loading up and whatever.
Yeah. So
do you really think the shift is going to help, kind of like give the defense a disadvantage so that more things happen offensively?
You mean like they have to stay on their side of the infield? Yeah. I actually think it might, because, you know, I don't know, but there's going to be some coaches, and if somebody can find a loophole in these rules, the very next week, every team's going to be trying that. You know what I mean? Because baseball is a game with you get away with what you can, and you don't cheat, but you manipulate the rules in your favor.
Like the second baseman takes his shoes off and puts it in the dirt. Now he's wherever he wants to go.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. You just said my shoes have to be in the dirt. You didn't say my feet. So yeah, semantics around here. So that is one, that is the second rule change. The third rule change is the bases. And I kind of like how they're doing this because this implements a lot of safety. Now, the bases are going to be bigger. So there will be, it goes from a 15-inch standard base to an 18-inch standard base. Now, that will also reduce the length of getting from home plate to first base to second, second to third, third to home. So that they're doing this, number one, for injury purposes, because it gives more, you know, like on a bang bang play, a lot of times, you know, guys are nearly stepping on each other's feet. Now, 3 inches might not sound like a lot, but sorry, I had to bite my tongue there. I almost did a little joke there, but that's my job,
Justin. You're the straight-laced one.
As soon as I said that, it sounded bad, but I'll bite my tongue on that. But 3 inches might not sound like a lot, but in this game of inches and safety, that could be the difference between someone rolling an ankle and being out for 3 weeks, or breaking an ankle, or falling down, or sliding into, you know, second base, whatever it might be. I think it promotes safety, and I'm all for that. Like, it doesn't really change the game all that much. I think maybe it'll increase stolen bases a little bit, and maybe promote offenses trying to steal more, but that makes the game, again, more exciting. So what say you?
Yeah. I mean, I don't really have an opinion on this, but I like that they're playing with the game a little bit. No, something needs to be done. And if this works, cool. If not, they pull it next time and make them the regular bases.
Exactly. Exactly. Like, I really think in no way this hurts the game. Right. So I think this is fine, and teams will adjust accordingly. And then the final changes, these are just more schedule changes. So division games, the number of division games. So the AL Central, that's games the Cleveland would play against the White Sox, the Twins, the Tigers, and the Royals. In the NL Central, for the Pirates, that's the games they would play against the Cubs, Cardinals, Brewers, and Reds. So those games will go from 76 in a season to only 52. Now, keep in mind, there's 162 games in a season. Each team will face the divisional foe 13 times over four series, which is 52 games. Those will also be split up evenly between home and road, though there will be an imbalance with each individual matchup, 7 for some teams, 6 for some teams on the road versus home. So those are some minor changes there. There will also be more interleague games. Each team will play every other team, which is kind of neat throughout the season, because, you know, how many times do, the Los Angeles Dodgers come to Cleveland? Not much at all. Maybe once every 8 to 10 years. Now it's going to be every other year. So I think that's kind of neat. How many interleague games will each major league team play? There will be, they will go from 64 to 66. So really not much of a change, but teams will play 6 games against 6 of their league opponents and 7 against 4 of their non-league opponents. And then, excuse me, this is the interleague play. I was on the wrong graphic there. But this will go from 20 matchups a year out of your 162 to 46. So 4 of those games will be against the natural rival that Major League Baseball deems. So Cleveland's natural rival is not Pittsburgh. It's actually the Cincinnati Reds, Battle of Ohio, which is kind of neat. And they made Pittsburgh and Detroit kind of the cellar dwellers, kind of their natural rivals against each other. So I think that's kind of cool. So Cleveland and Pittsburgh will, Cleveland and the Reds will play several times each year. But you will play against pretty much every team in Major League Baseball. So I thought that was kind of neat. We'll dive more into some of the rule changes on a future show. But before we wrap up, we got about 5 minutes left here. Let's go over a little bit of Cleveland Browns news and notes. So here's the main triarchy now of the Cleveland Browns coaching staff. We have replaced our defensive coordinator. That is now Jim Schwartz. We have now brought in a new special teams coordinator, and bravo on both hires. Bubba Ventrone comes over from the Indianapolis Colts. Alex Van Pelt will maintain his offensive coordinator status, but will also become now the new quarterback coach, replacing the former coach that just went to Arizona. Drew Petzinger, and Kevin Stefanski will maintain being the play caller and head coach. So, Joe, from a Browns perspective, what do you think of those moves?
I'm happy. Like, you gave me special teams and you gave me defensive coordinator. I'm happy. I don't care what else you do.
Mm-hmm. Now, I think they need to address some of the players on that, that those guys will be coaching. But yeah, I think those are great moves for the Browns. One guy that will not be a Cleveland Brown next year, safety John Johnson III. He is not released yet. He will be released on June 1st because of salary implications, but that will save the Browns nearly $10 million on the salary cap year. So, yeah, like John Johnson, he's a guy I really, really wanted to like a lot, but I just don't think he gave that full effort or was necessarily the player we thought he would be in Cleveland. So, you know, it is what it is. He'll catch on somewhere else, but you know, we'll see. The Browns will replace that position, but that's an area now where they're going to need to address. So, defensive tackle, wide receiver, now probably your back end safety there for the Browns. Those are three major needs, and not to mention backup quarterback too. You got to bring in somebody because I don't think Jacoby Brissett's going to be around next year. So we will see. There is
more Brown stuff, by the way.
Do I need more Brown stuff?
Do you have another Browns thing?
I have one more, but
okay,
go for it.
You go. I don't want to spoil it if in case it's the
same new thing is on the stadium, and we kind of touched on that already. Okay. I thought you would like this graphic though. There's a rendering of the new. If the Browns didn't put a roof on their current stadium, that is what it would look like.
Yes.
But they want First Energy Stadium gone. They said, by the looks of it, it was quickly built and poorly built. And that's a little bit of everyone's fault because they basically had to design it and build it in a 3-year time span. So it was quickly done and not done to the, basically it's outdated. It's the 10th oldest stadium in the NFL, but the new goal is to have a new stadium. I don't know if it's to start building or whatever, but by 2028. So, I mean, it's 2023 now. So in 5 years, we could be talking, going to games in a new stadium. And please, I know people will push back on this. Please put a roof on that stadium. Please.
Now you know Cleveland pretty well. Like, mm-hmm. Where would you build the new one
now
and let the old one still function?
Yeah, that's a great point. I think do not put it on the lake. That area should be for bars, shopping, hotels, restaurants. Like, that's what it should be. And you put that stadium there and it was not successful. You know, it, like on the lakefront right now, there's basically a private airport. There's the, you know, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. There's the Science Center and there's the Brown Stadium. The Science Center can stay. That's great. The Rock and Roll Hall of Fame can stay. That's great. But move that airport somewhere else. That's taking up valuable real estate, and demolish the Brown Stadium, put in shops and bars and restaurants and all that stuff down there. I would say, and actually someone, I read this the other day, they have talked about moving it more out to like the suburb areas. And do you know where that interchange is? I believe it's 480 and 77. It's kind of by where that Top Golf is. Right. I think that would be a great place. And people from Youngstown would probably love that too, because it shaves about 25, 30 minutes off your drive. So going to a Browns game would only be about a 40, 45 minute drive for Youngstown people.
Yeah, that's an industrial area too, isn't it?
I think it's more, That's a good question. I don't know 100%. I mean, there's a pretty big interchange there, but I think it's like more suburban, but yeah, I don't think there's a whole lot going on there, but you put an NFL stadium there, it's going to grow.
Still 20 minutes to downtown.
Exactly. So. Exactly. So I don't know.
All right. Here's my Browns question
for you.
So there was talk and some rumors about Josh Gordon that he basically said, and this is true, that the mention was that Josh Gordon, if he received a phone call from the Browns, he would show up in a heartbeat. And then Deshaun Watson liked it on Twitter.
Okay.
Or he shared it with, liked it on Twitter. And so the connection is now that the quarterback is looking at Josh Gordon as maybe a good receiver for his fit. What do you say?
No.
No. All right.
That ship has sailed. Okay. Josh Gordon, if you're giving me the 2014 Josh Gordon, not high or drunk, I'm probably taking him all day. But I mean, that was 9 years ago. Mm-hmm. He's not young anymore. And yeah, he's doing great things in the XFL, but you know, it's not NFL caliber players.
The snow monsters.
Yeah, right. Exactly. I like that nickname. The snow monsters would be an awesome.
That'd be a
great name. If we, you know how we were talking about that, if we ever started a high school, like the snow monsters would be a great name.
Oh, yeah.
That's cool.
That's intimidating.
Think about like the Yeti you could put on the football helmet and stuff. Mm-hmm. That'd be pretty neat. Okay. Snow monsters. I'm going to put that in the back of my mind if I ever get dibs to name a
team. Just cite me on it.
Yeah.
Give me credit.
I will. I thought you would like this too. This was going around social media. So Ohio area turtles develop sudden interest in pizza and martial arts in the East Palestine area specifically. But those that don't remember the past are doomed to repeat it. So
well, I had a Josh Gordon joke, but I didn't use it. But since you brought that up, I said, let's invite Josh Gordon back to Cleveland because now we're famous for train wrecks.
Oh, boy. Oh, too soon, Joe. It'll always be too soon, whether you're a Browns fan or East Palestine resident or whatever. So
I got to use my joke. I'm happy.
On that note, thank you for watching the 330 Sports Show. And Joe, tell us about like real quick, because I'm still like, I just saw you guys posted this, but tell us about like the MLO Bros and Youngstown Studio kind of conglomeration, because I'm curious about that too. We haven't really talked about that.
So we've been talking for a while now about doing a lot more cooperations between local content creators, and they are most like us. I mean, they do such a good job at attracting.
Little goofy, little weird,
but that's
nice
their,
and cool.
Their brand, right?
Yeah.
And so we're going to be doing some cooperations where they host some of our stuff, we host some of their stuff, and we're going to be more integrated than we have in the
I think that's awesome. And support, you know, like they can be a little bit more controversial, but they also do a lot of really good stuff in the community, and I think we can be funny and weird and goofy and interesting and all that stuff, and we do good in the community. And I think at the end of the day, that's what it's all about. We're trying to do good in the community, make Youngstown a great place, which it already is, but make it an even better place to be in the surrounding communities as well. So their home base is kind of like the Poland, Ohio area. Our home base is down here, downtown Youngstown at Youngstown Studio. So make sure to follow them. Make sure to follow us, Youngstown Studio, MLO Bros, 330 Sports Show, all that good stuff. And we appreciate you guys watching, listening tonight. YSU women tip off in about 45 minutes. Good luck to them, and good luck to the men tonight as they both host Horizon League action. So for Joe Danier, I'm Justin. You guys have a great weekend. We'll see you next week.
Thank you for listening to this show on Youngstown Studio. If you like our programming, we invite you to subscribe to our YouTube channel, follow our Facebook page, or subscribe to your favorite podcast platform like iTunes or Spotify. This is original Youngstown content, and we would appreciate you sharing the video.